Yep, it's now recording. Great.
Okay.
So if we just sort of go through, and the idea of each question, to see it as a prompt rather than a closed question, if you like. So firstly, do you want to talk about what the aims were of the projects?
Right. I'm going to talk about work-based learning projects primarily, and really, I mean, there are different aims depending on who you're talking to. If we're talking about sort of major aims, it's obviously about increasing the workforce skills and that sort of thing. And so when we were bidding for these projects, you had to look at what is happening in Wales at the moment, where the skills gaps are, and how you can meet those skills gaps by increasing people's qualifications. That's not necessarily my particular aim in doing that, or that was one of the aims. I think I had a more generic aim in terms of promoting continual professional development across the workforce anyway. So the qualification element of it, that while I appreciate it's important, I think where people didn't complete, the very fact we got them through and thinking about their own continuing professional development was important. And other aims were around actually making a splash for the Wales Institute for Work-Based Learning, or for the department as such, making a name for it in Wales, because we were never going to be able to have the money we needed to expand without looking for European social funding.
So you were looking for a step change in the level of activity by accessing that.
That's right. And I was looking for also ways of us accessing employers.
Yes.
Who we wouldn't have been able to talk to otherwise. So the marketing promotion type of aspect was very, very important. And I think, you know, has these projects have actually contributed to our success. It's also about, I think, making a statement to the university senior management team that we are going for growth. We're going to look at new things. We are people who should be supported because we've got good ideas.
So what was your role in the project?
Well, I had various roles, actually. I mean, the strategic role was as a member of the programme board for the University of Glamorgan originally, and then became the University of South Wales or whatever. And that was a difficult role because you had to think about the benefits of all the projects and whether you should support them or not. And we actually, for the Glamorgan ones, we had the first two projects, which were lateral and mentoring, and we also had the last two projects that they ever funded, which was SUSU and Elevate. And on occasions, that role was quite contested because I had to be objective about all of the projects, and on occasions our projects were seen to be failing under, you know, so that was a difficult role. Also, I had the role as, before we were the Wales Institute for Work-Based Learning, still being head of our work-based learning provision. And I suppose it's looking both ways. You've got to look inside the organisation, you've got to look out of it. So they were difficult roles, but I didn't actually see myself in a delivery role in terms of curriculum delivery. I saw myself in a role to make sure that the targets were being met, and particularly the targets that I thought were important were being met. But occasionally, that brought into conflict with the board.
Yeah, yeah, Because I suppose that's leads on to the next question. Sort of, so when you were developing the projects, you know, and at the start, you know, what did you think would be the challenges? You know, what were you worried about going in?
Well, if I step back, because the Glamorgan projects came out of something before that, which I was involved in, which was called a strategic workforce in Wales, developing a strategic workforce in Wales or something like that. And at that stage, we were just allocated lumps of money to write stuff and do bits of investigation. So I remember getting $5,000 to do something on learning contracts in Wales, for example. So I think I'd been lulled into a false sense of security about the way the budgets worked. And I think we had a very, very steep learning curve about budgets, European funding, match funding, overhead rates and so on. And although I hadn't realised that was a problem, it was a problem. And it was a problem for our institution. Yeah. It was a problem for every institution. It wasn't just linked to us.
Yeah.
So I think the actual writing the plans and the fact, because not every HEI in Wales joined in. Aberystwyth didn't, for example. We kept changing the rules. Partly because WEFO, the rules evolved, but for these projects there was an intermediary, which was the University of Glamorgan, and they kept changing the rules as well. And so I think the budget was the main issue. Achieving targets, I think, in common with every other project in that area, we put in the targets to achieve the budget we wanted rather than think about what was really realistic, because no one had any experience.
No, because there was no market research
in terms of
everybody's targets were drawn up in a vacuum.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think actually over the 4 years that I was a member of that board, we got so much better at it. We did, I mean, in the beginning, and the fact we got the first two actually says it all, really. You know, I went in there and said, I think we can do this, and they said, go on then. Whereas by the end, we were very, very attuned to market research and attuned to labour market information. And so, yeah, I mean, that was a problem.
Yeah.
The other thing, I think, the main challenge was about the curriculum challenge and us being able to have a responsive curriculum to employers' needs. And we didn't achieve that to begin with at all, but we moved towards it towards the end. So, you know, I think that's part of it.
So I suppose, as I say, at the start you'd have to say, well, we've got a certain sort of skill set that we can offer.
Yeah.
And that if that's not what people want, then that's an issue about adaptability. Isn't
that's
it?
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And we did move from that, and I think we're much, much stronger now as the Wales Institute for Work-Based Learning. So that's been a major achievement of the projects.
Great. Okay. So did the project use a formal project management methodology such as PRINCE2? As far as you know.
As far as I know. I mean, I think it used elements of PRINCE2.
Yeah, but it wouldn't label itself as officially being a PRINCE2. No.
It wasn't a controlled environment at all.
No.
And there were some very good things we learned from PRINCE2, and I know that some of the project staff had training in PRINCE2. Larry, for example, in the first project in Lateral, adopted some of the reporting mechanisms that we've kept throughout, and they've been very, very good.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know anything about PRINCE2, but my feeling is that it wasn't suitable for the vagaries that we have.
No, it's not. No, you're right.
And I think also it doesn't really say much about the human resource management aspects of projects.
No. It's about control and products and things. It assumes that normal organisational practice will address that, and in practice that's where most of the issues arise. So I suppose that question: have you had any project management training in your role as being on the project?
No. I mean, we had training about how to report things to WEFO and so on, but that wasn't project management.
So there was some process training, that's fine. Yeah. Okay. So at the start, again, just want to think about, you know, as you were starting these off, how confident were you that they would succeed? Were you worried at the start, or did you feel that you were going to...
Well, it depends how you define succeed, doesn't it, as well?
Well, I suppose.
How confident was I that we'd meet the target?
Yeah.
Not confident.
No. Okay, that's fine.
However, how confident was I that this would actually raise our game and put our heads above the parapet and get senior management support? Yeah. I was very confident.
So you were sure you'd get some benefits, but you weren't sure that you'd meet the target.
That's right.
And I
mustn't forget, because I gave a thought to these questions yesterday. I mean, a major thing was about getting employers involved and talking to employers, and I'm not convinced we would have got that without them.
No.
Don't think we'd be still here.
No. So
my benefits.
So the organisational, broadly speaking, the organisation's benefits were that it had allowed us to develop that practice.
That's right.
Even if, you know, sort of individually, we may or may not have hit the output targets that we'd put in. Okay.
I mean, when I was reflecting on this yesterday, I was thinking how I acted. Is it called Janus-like? I was saying one thing to one person, and other things. Yeah. But you had to do that, and I think it was worth it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's fine. Well, that's that's great. Okay. So. Okay. So how was the project's progress monitored? So that was in terms of. You were saying you were reporting to the board, reporting to yourself in a way.
Yeah.
Reporting to the board against targets, against profile.
That's right.
That's the fundamental mechanism.
And that was quite interesting to do, because at the same time as each board had a reporting element and for a long time an approval of new projects element. And there was all the politicking that goes on in these things, that if you had a new project you wanted to develop, you wouldn't necessarily castigate a project that was possibly failing. You would listen and try to think about ways that you could reframe it as being successful in other ways. So that board was very interesting. Once we stopped approving new projects, because they had to run 3 years and there was no time, it became much tougher on the reporting of results and so on. But it was monitored through reporting.
And you've hinted at the project board was the authorising body in terms of whether projects carried on or stopped.
Yeah.
Were there occasions when projects were closed down?
Yes.
There were. So the project board was taking seriously its role as looking after the money and making sure that it was having an effect. Yeah.
And I can remember some very uncomfortable discussions, not just with our projects, but with projects more generally, and where we thought that people were not realistic about what they could achieve. Mm. But they would come to the board and try to... In most cases, it was mitigated through another person. I happened to be the person on the board who was running our projects.
Yeah.
But in many cases, it was pro-vice-chancellor level. And so the people who were running the projects, they weren't running the projects.
They had a distance. They had a built-in distance.
That's right.
to say, well, okay, well, if that's the case, then yeah, then they'll have to go back and but you were in a
we were seen as the most successful university, I think, from the other universities in terms of our engagement, because I went to every board, and the few times I couldn't, I sent a substitute. What happened with a lot of HEIs, and then we broadened it to further education institutions, is a different person came each time.
Yeah.
And that meant that the few people who were consistent had much more power and control.
Yeah.
And yeah, we also had things like we had rotating chairs to begin with, and that didn't work either because of, you know, it's just not a great thing to do. So in the end we brought in John Grayston, who was at that stage in charge of Colega Cymru, to be an independent chair, and that was very good as well.
Yeah. Because I suppose that, you know, there is an inevitable tension with working in a course consortium.
Yeah.
That there are, you know, legitimate conflicts between the institutions.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, that there are.
And also, Martin, you have to think about this. It was a period of merger. There were a lot of merging.
Yeah.
And so when I started on that board, I was the University of Wales Trinity St David rep. And Catherine was there from the University from Swansea Met, for example. Mm. We merged. I think Lampeter had someone separate right at the very, very start.
Yeah.
And
so in addition to being a complex program in itself, it was also coincided with a major change within the organisation.
That's right.
And so, so you can see that it would. So, from what you're saying, it sounds as if you felt that the project board was actually fulfilling its role.
Program
board was working effectively at holding projects to account and releasing or not releasing money accordingly.
That's right.
So
feel that there was a very good central unit at Glamorgan. Mm. You know, sometimes you didn't like their decisions and things like that, but that was neither here nor there. They actually did keep good control over it. And they weren't members of the board, they reported to the board. So top sliced.
So it meant the board was able to focus on those that executive decision making rather than the sort of the actually running the.
That's right.
That's great. Great.
Yeah. I do want to say one thing about when we had to close the project down.
Yeah, go on.
Because we had to close down lateral because we weren't getting the numbers.
Mm.
And really, when I think about it, what we were achieving was self-actualisation for individual learners.
Mm.
Whether it really impacted on the workforce in Wales or on employers, I don't know.
Mm.
In some cases it did. But, you know, that was a very difficult project to sell to the board because they didn't understand accreditation of prior experiential learning.
Mm.
And so when we weren't making the targets, I can remember saying to, we argued for about an hour and a half in a board meeting about, because I wanted to keep it going, and the programme management unit at Glamorgan didn't.
Yeah.
And we actually ended up having to take a break and came back, and we'd had a bit of talking outside, and we agreed a strategy for going forward. But I felt very strongly that a lot of board members didn't understand what I've meant by work-based learning, and that they needed to be educated in that way.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's the ethos of work-based learning as it's developed here, as it originally developed here, was very much about the individual seeing reaching their potential.
Exactly.
And there's a slight mismatch then between the what the funders thought they were going to be getting out of it, which was economic change through improving the workforce. Whereas if they'd been just our students coming along, we would say, well, it's nice if they make an impact
that's
to the workplace, but the focus is on the student to learn a benefit. And so I think that's,
that was particularly with that one project.
Yes, because that was the that was focused on delivering APEL.
Yeah.
And so that was the benefit that was being produced, was that more people would have done APEL, which is very good for them, but it's not if you were targeting going for quick wins in terms of improving.
You'd do 10 credit IT courses at level 4,
which is the way the way it ended up. So there is that sort of there's a distance there between the goals of the organisation and the goals of the funder, isn't
there? That's right.
That's really that. Great. Okay. So here we go. So what known or unknown, I suppose I could say, issues were encountered in implementation? So as you rolled out programs, what were the things? Was there things that came up which you hadn't expected, or were the things that if there were any challenges, were they things that you expected to happen anyway? You know, sort of your concerns were borne out.
It's very difficult here because, you know, you reflect that if I'd have thought about it, I would have known that. But that's the trouble is with running projects, you're also running an awful lot of other things.
Oh yeah, sure, no, that's fine. It's inevitable, especially given that, you know, when you're developing a project, you don't. There's a limited amount of information you have and limited amount of time you have to put into it. So it's not surprising that the things you could have worked out, you know, should have known, if you like, or could have known. Let's start with staffing. Yes, come on.
Obviously, you know, we'd written job descriptions, person specifications and things like that. What we hadn't in the earlier projects, and we got much better at doing, is we hadn't foreseen the delay it would take to get these projects, these posts in place. Because not only, you know, although we were ready to go on day one with them, we had to have them authorised by the senior management team. There were unnecessarily long delays in HR, unfortunately, that I could have foreseen, and I could have been on their back all the time, but I decided not to for other reasons. So often we didn't get the staff in place as early as we should have, which meant the rest of the project was sort of
everything else got
moved along.
So
with reflection, we've got much better at that. I think I made some other notes about what I thought. I think we didn't always liaise well with employers. I think we made some bad choices about advertising media and things like that. But again, we've learnt from that.
I suppose particularly, I think, as you say, in terms of marketing, that nobody knows what the answer is, and that, you know, that you do. Yes, you just have to try and see if it works.
And I think once we got people in place who really understood that and understood it was a word of mouth thing rather than, you know, and it was about talking to people, it got better and better. And I think I could have foreseen, if we'd have thought about it, that we really didn't get very far by making people offers of things that they didn't want. That, you know, it really had to be, it had to come from the employer, with the exception of the APEL project. It had to come from the employer, and you had to work with them and co-develop it, and that's what worked.
Which is, I suppose, that's, you know, philosophically, that's the, you know, that is the opposite to the usual university approach, is we put on a course, and then it's up to students to decide whether it's right for them. And that's, so it's not surprising that we had to learn that, because that is a, you know, that is a complete
and
turnaround.
And I think the staff that we have are more attuned to that belief, and actually I do think, I was talking to our dean about it a while before I left. He's saying actually that most of the schools are now coming around to the way of thinking, certainly with employer engagement, that it is pointless offering things that no one wants, that, you know, that they're moving towards the work-based learning model, that you've actually got to get in there, find and co-develop it.
So then sort of trying to highlight what's the single biggest challenge you think either an individual project, or if was there one thing that you'd think that was sort of like an existential threat to which sort of you're hinting really is the issue around recruitment.
I think it's the targets that were set. Remember, we didn't write the original PIF, or whatever it's called, that went to WEFO. That was written by Glamorgan.
Right.
And Glamorgan had a different view about work-based learning and foundation degrees than we had.
Yeah.
So the things that they thought were important, I didn't necessarily think were important.
Yeah.
So meeting the sort of making the targets work for them and for us was the biggest project, the biggest issue.
Yeah. So that's the tension. Okay. Okay, and in terms of targets, then did they meet the targets? Did you reprofile?
We met some of the targets, and the targets we met in most cases were all about employer engagement and diversity and all those sorts of things. I don't think any project actually managed to meet its credit target.
Right.
But there was a process of reprofiling that we went through. And so there was a short period of time that we were always on budget or on target before things slipped.
Yeah.
But we met other targets, and I think those targets were important.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. I mean, I think so there was the opportunity to reprofile, and they were reprofiled.
Was a real delay in reprofiling for the projects that went through the Glamorgan one, because it was a sort of two-phase process. You had to do it with Glamorgan, and then they had to do it with WEFO. And so, in many cases, it took too long.
Yeah.
And I think now the situation we're in with WEFO is much better, because there isn't an intermediary you go through.
No, that's right. Okay, I mean, and I think we've already talked about early closure, unless you wanted to talk and say any more about the sort of the issue around, you know, projects not meeting their targets, and then, you know, the from the funding point of view, saying, well, it's not making sense. I mean, that's just...
You've got the early closure didn't work. I mean, we had to do that. Meant we had to actually make staff redundant.
Mm. Yeah.
Having said that, the university redeployed them, which I think they didn't have a response.
No.
A legal responsibility.
They had the option.
They had a moral responsibility. I mean, the second part of that question that you sent, what were the institutional benefits? I think the skills that the staff developed over running it have been terrifically strong for the institution. And I don't even think it's just our team. I think it's broader than that. I think it's, you know, the people like Sarah Kelly and the Research and Innovation Enterprise Services. I think the finance staff have developed skills. I don't think we would have had... and some people have really personally developed over the periods of these projects.
So in a way, sort of getting involved in the project's arena has benefited the institution by bringing in, or either developing or bringing in new skills, new practices, which, if we hadn't done that, then that would...
I mean, there's some people now who are sort of leading in our area, who came in through the projects.
Yeah, and that's not when people normally talk about institutional benefits. They wouldn't think of that as being. They would tend to think in terms of either money coming in or students coming in or whatever, or perhaps, you know, the profile of the university. I mean, which I think those, you know, those are. There's bits there, but actually, as you say, that's just the substantial benefit. Has been the staff
skill set. I mean, there's obviously stuff about, you know, we kept all the computers and we did all this
stuff, but
that's not what I think is important about.
But if I suppose, you know, that if you were in terms of, if you actually did have to justify to senior management what the institution was getting out of supporting, not subsidising, these projects. The answer was, well, partly, yes, we're doing what we need to do, but also we are getting this institution building.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, I got an opportunity on a number of occasions to make presentations to the Board of Corporation about it. because, you know, there wasn't a lot of innovative curriculum development going on in the university at that time.
Well, I suppose that comes back to because it was a time of merger.
Yeah.
That attention was elsewhere, and that this was an area where there was a positive.
Yeah, that's right. And so I think the legacy of that is that I still know members of the governors, and we get supported for doing all sorts of things. Mm. And it's about making personal contacts. Mm. And it gave us the opportunity to do that.
Okay, so how were lessons learned captured during the project and at the end, and have they informed the institution's future practice?
Well, obviously we went through formal evaluations and things like that from...
So there was an external evaluation.
Yeah.
And then there was our end of projects reports.
That's right,
which included a lessons learned element.
Yeah, and they went to the board. And all the way through, actually, every single board meeting, we had an opportunity to share what the lessons were. And I do think we grew as a board. My caveat to that is some organisations didn't take it seriously enough, so they just rotated the people.
Yeah.
But the people who were there, right the way from the start to the end, learnt a lot of lessons.
So you said, as you said, sort of by the end, it was working well, and the individual project teams were working well.
Yeah.
So I suppose, the second bit of the question then is do you think that that then affected later practice?
Because
of the continuity of staff, I suppose, is the thing, is that
that's right, you had to be committed to it. When it failed in institutions across Wales where there was no commitment to it, or when it was one person's good idea but they didn't share that with the senior management team or whatever, where it worked in institutions, and Cardiff Met it worked quite well in. Yeah, there are other institutions apart from.
But yes, so I suppose that's one of the sad things, I suppose, about the if project teams disperse at the end of a project, is that there's that loss of knowledge, loss of experience.
Right. Yeah.
And I know institutions don't like making commitments. If they only did things that they could ensure would carry on forever, then they'd never do any projects.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
there is a natural turnover life cycle to projects where you can't say we're committed to keeping everyone.
No. Look at what we did though with GLAAD.
GLAAD, yeah.
We actually bridged people.
Yeah.
Because the senior management team, the director of finance and the vice chancellor, saw the success of it and believed that we could do it.
Yes, I mean, I think that sort of mixed economy of substantial project funding and then a bit of institutional support to fill in the gaps is the best one, really, because I think the doing odd bits of project work along as part of your main work doesn't really work either.
No.
That's great. Okay. So in terms of the project closure process, how was that? As they were closing down, either early or actually when they were supposed to, how was that undertaken? I mean,
our strengths were the fact that the University of Glamorgan had done this so many times before, and had a very good track record with European social funding projects and ERDF and all those sorts of things, and knew exactly what we needed to do for project closure, and disseminated that well. Came and checked that we'd done it. I actually think those projects closed exceptionally well.
No, I think the fact that it was recognised as something that needed to be done, it was timetabled and it was planned and as you say, checked and everything. I think you're right. I think that when there's other projects where people have literally walked out.
And that can happen, can't it? Because people have got fixed term contracts. They will need to go and get another job.
Yeah, yeah.
And often they don't start leaving, looking, at the time their contract finishes.
Exactly.
A few months beforehand.
Which adds an extra thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so What impact has the experience of working with these projects had on your professional practice? What have you, how do you think you've developed, or what skills have you added as a cookbook?
I don't think I've actually achieved the financial skills, but I'm much more aware of the need for them. Mm. I think it gave me the confidence to go in and argue the case of all sorts of things, both with WEFO, but the senior management team of the institution and that sort of thing. I think it's been an amazing eye-opener about how industry works in this part of Wales, how the regional learning plan is done, partnership works, and all of those sorts of things. And it pushed us right into, it forced us to engage with things we wouldn't have necessarily engaged with. Because in teaching, sometimes, you know, just think about, I've got to assess these students, I've got to get through the exam board and so on. It wasn't about that. I mean, that was important. The student experience was important. But what it was much more outward-facing.
And so I think, you know, I'll put words in your mouth. Would you feel that... to start with, you felt that what was really important was the students, and that you were just paying lip service to the other targets, and that by the end you might have... I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I actually tried to act with integrity throughout. But I think I did think... I mean, we wouldn't have kept applying. We wouldn't have if we didn't think it was a good thing.
Yeah.
And I also didn't want to lose staff. So when we had the first two projects and they were going to close, I really wanted to keep staff on because I could see what they could give to the institution.
Yeah.
And...
So, because this was an opportunity which wouldn't otherwise exist in terms of actually building that core of staff and expertise.
That's right. So, you know, that's... Yeah. That is a really big reason why I did it.
Yeah.
I think if it troubles these things rely on a few people, and if everyone had gone, if you know we'd all walked out, it would have. You know, it is about the enthusiasm you've got for the area as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I suppose that there's that sort of critical mass as well.
Yeah,
that
there is.
If the university had dropped back to saying that there were two people or three people in work-based learning, that wouldn't be enough to ever develop much.
And now, I think also we learnt about, you know, taking on people under the Workforce Development Fellows. I thought that was a very good piece of learning. I don't know whether I'm moving on to the next question.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But, you know, so we can sort of see whether they work well with us, and some of those people have gone on to lead all sorts of things in the institution.
So essentially, that it was an opportunity to try out things, which I think there is that free spacing project where you can be more flexible about your approach than the institution would normally.
I think that's right. I think its impact on me was that I've never considered myself entrepreneurial in any situation, but realising that compared to most of higher education institutions, we were entrepreneurial. We were very entrepreneurial.
I think that's right. Seeing the opportunities and being prepared to put in the work and the resources to maximise those opportunities. Because I think that's that which other people wouldn't. You know, people do just sit on their hands and say, well, you know, I've got my money coming in, I don't need to worry about it. Okay, so then sort of the last question I've got too, I think, is so in terms of involvement with the projects, what did you find most challenging as a in terms of fulfilling your role? What was it that you struggled with perhaps, or you felt was hard work?
I think it was deciding what reality was, because you had to know really about those projects and how successful they were or not. but you also had to sell it outside of the institution, to the programme boards and things like that. So it was being very careful that you didn't oversell it, but you put a positive spin on things.
So I suppose there's always that sort of slight gap between the figures on the page,
yeah.
which is, you know, objective. I mean, there may be some fudging, but it's effectively yeah. an objective indication of where you are. And then that may be completely separate to your gut feeling. Is this going to
yeah.
work or not?
Yeah.
And that's trying to, and those are.
And those are the things you have to balance, and you can't get it too wrong, because you can't say very many times, mm. actually, you must believe me that this is going to work, because, you know, you'll lose credibility. But you can sell the softer outcomes mm. very successfully,
yeah.
you know, as long as you've got some achievement, I think.
Yes.
And so for me, it was the balancing of all those things. And, you know, when you go into the staff teams, you don't want to say you're all failing. What you want to say is how can we achieve these things like that. When you go to the management, you want to say they're really doing well.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's yes. I suppose it's easy when it's good news. It's easy.
Yeah, that's right.
But when it's tough, because the Susu project,
yeah.
there was a genuine thing at the end of the first year
yeah.
where, on any rational basis,
yeah.
you could say, well, we ought to close this
yeah.
down, it's not achieving its targets.
I think Susu was incredibly lucky in that at the time that was happening, there were some much larger projects that were failing. And, you know, what's a couple of million when you're
yeah.
looking at
yes.
many million
yeah.
as a board, and we just sort of whizzed
yeah.
over that.
No, because yes, I think you're right, and I think that we, you know, we consciously made the effort with the project board.
And yeah.
we went there, and we didn't gloss over
no.
the fact that we were way off target.
No,
so we were explicit. So
yeah.
we understand completely if you choose to close it down.
Yeah,
because rather than saying, oh, there were reasons why it might have worked, as it in the end it did.
Yeah.
But
So I think compromise is the big thing, and I'm still glad I look back
yeah.
on them,
mm.
and other projects we've done, Wales Institute for Work-Based Learning, that are ongoing, like clinical mm. leadership and, you know, various things with Torvine mm. and so on, which were all really projects. You had to cost them out, you had to
mm.
work out. They're still worth doing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's the, you know, the size of the challenge
yeah.
was partly to do with the opportunity, but then also the you know, the fact you're going into the unknown. That,
yeah.
And that, you know, that bit of learning we've done, and that, you know, that our approach to new opportunities has been much more mature.
Yeah.
I think, because of that experience with, you know, with doing the first few and seeing. Know, seeing where over-egging your targets
yes.
can get you.
Yes, that's right. Or not really understanding how you got the targets, you
yes,
know.
Yeah.
And we weren't the only institution.
No,
like, so,
no, no. Well, I think it's inevitable. You know, that's the whole thing about projects, is that they are new. That's
And projects in higher education, I'd assume further education as well. Often the staff don't have those sorts of skills.
No, well, they've had no opportunity
yeah.
to develop. Thanks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Great.
Okay. Well, that's been great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The batteries haven't run out. That's why I kept looking at this, because the batteries are just fading. But that's brilliant. And that's really interesting.